Welcome to In The Stiffs podcast with me, Sam Easton. I'm joined by my friends and former Shrewsbury teammates, Gavin Cowan and Dave Edwards.
Big thank you to our sponsors, the brilliant Budgeon Motors, kindly sponsoring us in this third series, a family-owned business of 40 years with exceptional customer service. Loads of competitive deals on new and used cars. Get yourselves down there.
Right, okay, welcome everybody in the Stiffs podcast. Number one sports podcast on the planet. Is that right, Dave?
Number two in the UK.
Is it number two in the UK? Because I heard a little statistic. I heard you and Scott talking before. What was the actual
number? There's a two in there.
What was it? Did you hear what it was, Gav?
Oh, did you? And there is a two in there.
It was 126th.
Sports podcast.
No, not sport. Football.
Podcast.
In
Shrewsbury.
In the White Horse pub.
126?
That's only in the UK. I think higher in the world.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. We're more appreciated anyway, worldwide than we are in Shropshire.
Thanks very much for listening, everybody. Anyway, if you're joining us on Apple or whatever, thank you very much. But you need to get onto YouTube. But actually, we've hit 1,000 subscribers, haven't we?
We have. Yeah.
Today.
So if you haven't subscribed, it's no thanks to you. And we don't even need them watch anymore, do we? Now, we've hit the magic number. Thank you very much to Budgeon, our sponsors. Best car dealership around. Although they haven't sent anybody today, tonight, have they? Have they provided anything with today? I've driven myself.
No, not really.
Disappointing. And we're actually, I'll tell you where we are. We're in the White Horse, which is my local pub, which is where my daughter works. And we've got a few select guests coming who are here with us now. And we have got a special guest, a current Shrewsbury Town footballer, who's coming in about half an hour. But it's December, got the Christmas tree up. We're going to share some Christmas stories. How are we feeling about that, lads?
Depends what sort of stories we're going to be telling.
How are we feeling about having a few people watching us? We did actually do this when we did the Aston Villa one. We did Brian Little.
Did it at Budgeon, wasn't it?
So for you who were actually in the room, we did this with Budgeon, didn't we? We did it with Brian Little. And it was quite good, wasn't it? And initially, we were really conscious about everybody being here. But after 10 minutes, we relaxed a little bit, didn't we? And we just sort of got on with it. Yeah. And when we listened back to it, it didn't sound any different.
And when you see the happy faces coming through and like familiar faces, some of you I've seen before as well and said hello before, you're like a bit more relaxed.
Do you think my introduction wasn't as slick as normal looks? I was a bit nervous.
You're like very like automated. Yeah, you're like robotic. Yeah. It's not like you.
I think I was like, I don't know where, because that light's right on my face. I'm hot and I've got like people looking at me.
You've had seven points.
I felt like I was on Sky Sports. Anyway, you people in the audience, what do you think about the setup? It's pretty low key, isn't it? Yeah, we used to have this big Roadcaster Pro, didn't we? And we had all sorts, but we've sort of streamlined it back.
You say that, but we did want it here tonight. Gab left it on his
minibus. Whoa, hang on a minute.
I'm not having that.
It's a collective thing. It was left, we utilised one of my
Whose
vans.
Whose minibus was it? Yours?
Yeah, it was, yeah. See, this is what you get for, like, you know, hiring out your minibus for the podcast.
It's not like, what happened as well, it's like, in terms of organisation between the three of us, there's me, and then there's Gavin.
Well, what happened was, Wits,
like, literally, I'm like that.
In our WhatsApp group, Wits put, "Don't forget the Roadcaster Pro." So I went down to what we call our studio, the summer house.
Don't understand that.
It's the studio.
It's a great resource.
But Scott was like, "I promise I haven't got it." And then I sort of started thinking back over the timeline and realised it was still in the van. So.
Which is at Lillishall.
Yeah, which is at Lillishall. So good job this is going out later because someone might be making a way to grab it out of the van tonight.
Anyway, so we've got a few people here. Obviously, I do this thing all the time as a head teacher. No shouting out. If you want to ask a question, put your hand up. If you want to go to the toilet, put your hand up. You've all had a drink, so you don't have any more drinks. So I'm not having anybody going for a drink. If anybody gets too leery, you'll be asked to leave. But what we're going to talk about are Christmas parties. Now, Christmas parties these days, and imagine when we got our guests coming, are a bit different. But back in my day, they were wild. You would, as a footballer, so you'd come back pre-season training, start of July. Now, in July, you'd have your fine lists, and you'd be getting fined for £5 for late for training, £15 for, I don't know, whatever you've done, not bringing cakes in on your birthday.
£2 for flip-flops, all
yes,
that sort of stuff.
All that sort of stuff. And it would all be in a kitty for your Christmas party. So your Christmas party, you'd have a huge kitty, obviously not. Hold on, Dave's Wolves. Dave would have a 20 grand kitty at Wolves. Like, yeah. It Shrewsbury, we didn't have.
But it was brilliant because what you used to do in the changing room then, because you knew the money was going to the kitty for Christmas, you'd try and catch your mates out. So you tried to do everything you could to try and get them fine because you wanted more money in the pot. So, yeah, it was constant trying to get one over on each other to get more money in the pot for a bit of a
But you would get fined for everything up until December and January. Get away with
lost interest. Yeah, so then you would have your Christmas party and it would be massive, wouldn't it? It'd be amazing and everything would be built up for that. And you'd be on a countdown, wouldn't you? Because Christmas is a really busy time for footballers. So it would always be a nightmare trying to figure out what date you have. So you'd suddenly find a date and your fixtures would come out and you'd go... It would whiz round the lads, like, and you'd be going, right, we'll play on Saturday, then we don't play till the Thursday. And there's a 48-hour rule that you'd always have in football. Like, if you play on a Thursday, you couldn't go out on a Wednesday or a Tuesday.
When have you ever played on a Thursday?
Well, over Christmas?
Nah. That'd be only Boxing Day, possibly.
Yeah, Boxing Day.
But to be fair...
And New Year's Day. So, like, hold on a minute. Like, this is about them. So, over Christmas, you would play on Boxing Day... You'd probably play on the 30th and you would play on New Year's Day. I don't know how much Dave knows about the calendar, but that changes every single year.
The Christmas do would never be around that time. No. It would always be start of December.
Yeah, yeah. You'd have it like mid-December, I reckon.
Disagree.
Mid-December.
Yeah, it would. I've done a few in November.
Because you'd never squeeze it in, would you? With the itinerary over Christmas, with the Boxing Day, the one in between, New Year's Day. You're never going to squeeze it in, are you?
Well, I used to have my Christmas parties in December. There's November and March for whatever reason, anyway. But you fit it in, anyway, and the build-up would be for that. And it would be amazing, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
And it's not like, I don't know if it's like anymore. Well, that will come on to Dave's in a bit, because the good thing is that, obviously, we played in an era where you didn't have any mobile phones, you didn't have all that problem. But I suppose the back end, when you're playing for Wolves, I can imagine would be very different.
We'll only really be telling you 50 to 60% of the stories from them.
Let's start from the very beginning. Let's start when I was at Sunderland when I was 18, because they were the proper Christmas parties. So you would, like, as 18, you'd be so excited, but you'd be frightened to death. And I remember being 18, 19, and it was fancy dress. So I went as a nurse, obviously, like, in a nurse's dress, wig, full makeup, everything, all the lads, like, incredible outfits.
Most disgusting nurse I've ever seen.
Yeah, it wasn't great. But then you go to, and we all went to the venue, but then back then you would have, like, what's a politically correct way to describe them? Strippers. that would be common practice then, which you think now, dear me, it was crazy. But and you would be so excited for it. And you'd get there. And we used to just go around town. So when we were at Sunderland, we would just go around the pubs. So imagine, like, the Shrewsbury Town lads now just rocking up at the White Horse, 30 of the lads, like, fancy dress. And you just think, phew. And the first time we went out, surprisingly, 30 lads walking around town, fancy dress. But listen, we got in a huge fight. Massive fight. I think I've said this on the podcast a million times. But so I was dressed as a nurse. We had Kevin Ball, who was like one of the hardest blokes ever, dressed as Madonna. The next thing you know, he's rolling around punching somebody in the face like that, in a dress like that. Obviously, he was under crackers underneath, like the hairiest man in the world. Trying to keep him down. And you just think, some of those Christmas parties, amazing and wild. But that was my first ever Christmas party, and I thought, that's something else. The next day, Peter Reid got us in training. So we all turned up, but it was only just to make sure everybody was still alive. Peter, we just got everybody back again. He's like, have a good night, lads. And we were like, yeah. But I was being sick at 3 o'clock in the morning. But that was
the
first
standard for you at 18 then, that must have, like...
You must have been similar when you were 18.
Yeah, yeah.
Especially, was it non-league as well at 18? So that must have even been more.
Yeah, 18, no, but 19, yeah. 19 was non-league and it was, massive culture shock. I remember, we were saying just before we come on air, like... Now, like, some of the players go to London, and London's, like, now very pretentious, and you can't do anything, no one can get in anywhere, and it just ends up being a bit of a nightmare, and you can't, you know, lads really just want to be together, don't they, in a bit of a pub, having a bit of a laugh together, and you could sort of do it back then, and in sort of Leicester Square, you used to say, right, we're going up west, and that was the big thing, and you would have the Hippodrome, Shush Nightclub, and Tiger, and the bouncers all there, if you knew them, which we did because we probably went out a little bit too much, you'd be able to go into one club and they'd let you out the side door to get into the next, and then they'd go, right, you get over there. And if you were unlucky, they'd say, oh, yeah, go on, give us 50 quid and we'd give you sort of almost like a bit of a day pass, you know, like like a little bit like Alton Towers, like all the way through. I mean, some of it, we were lucky because we used to get on great with them, and obviously, like, we'd get them tickets for games or whatever, not that they'd want to come and watch us, but, like, for some of my mates who played sort of, you know, in the league or whatever. And some of the lads, you'd see them giving over their 50 quid and the bouncer would go, yeah, yeah, if you just go across there to that bouncer, he'll let you in. And they'd get there and come back and go, oh, no, he said, doesn't know who we are. He's going, I've never seen you before in my life, mate. So yeah, but we just used to have an awesome time back then because, again, there was, you know, you didn't have to worry about any phones. You sort of could be a little bit outlandish and a bit, well, out and out stupid, basically, idiots. And yeah, we had brilliant times. But like what Sam was saying there, just always ended up in one lad talking to the wrong girl whose boyfriend was stood at the bar, ended up being that, and then there was loads of us, and then they turn around and realise loads of us, and we go, oh, there's only three of them, and then 45 of their mates would be stood over there, and it was just like absolute carnage.
There's no phones, was there? They can't do that anymore, can they? And it's a shame in some ways, because you get, like, I think fans will go, oh, like, you know, when we are not going to see Shrewsbury Town lads having their Christmas party around here, and everybody's like, it's a shame they should be able to do that. But it's difficult for them, isn't it? Because all it takes is somebody like mobile phones now all the time. And it is a bit of a shame that.
Do you know what? It's funny you say that, though. The last one I remember, Dave, and you were definitely there. Do you remember when we were in the one up the road from... What was the one that was up the road from Pizza Express now?
In town itself?
Yeah, yeah.
We wouldn't have done a Christmas do. We've done plenty of nights out.
It was a bit of a Christmas do. Like, it was a bit of a pre-Christmas do. And we all ended up around the pool table, didn't we? And everybody was like...
And you used to call the bedroom, that one?
Yeah, something like that. And we all ended up in there anyway. And I think that's probably the last time, actually, I remember a bunch of lads being together, able to sort of go, right, we're the sort of play for the local football club, and we're able to go out and mix with the supporters and all of that. And
that bit's definitely gone. I remember from my time at Shrewsbury when I was first at the club.
Can you remember your first?
A lot of the lads would move to Shrewsbury, in and around it, so you'd all be out together. Whereas now, everyone kind of travels in from everywhere, don't they?
Yeah.
Do all the Shrewsbury lads, not many live in town then?
Not many, unless they're from a far, like a long way away, they'll rent somewhere.
Because we had
the whole team pretty much, didn't we? Lived in and around
Shrewsbury. Kelv Langmead was from Coventry, so he moved into Shrewsbury. Me from Essex, moved into Shrewsbury. Ben Hurd, Watford.
Colin McManaman.
Like, everybody lived in the town, so it was easy for us to do that. But I remember that was a pre-Christmas drink. And any excuse, I mean, there was a Christmas drink and a pre-Christmas drink. Like Sam said, you ended up being in March going, she's got a bit of a pre-Christmas drink, really. But
my first one, I remember, you were there, because we said no pictures, but I remember I had like a disposable camera and I've got the pictures at home because I sent them to you, haven't I, before? It's a picture of you and Joe and Foggy and stuff like that. So we went to a local fancy dress shop. He said, can we have every single one of your fancy dress outfits? Then we drew out a hat to get my camera. What did you go as again?
I was a pimp.
He was a pimp, yeah.
Joe was a toy soldier. Yeah. Actually, his was a good one, though, wasn't it? He went out and he had the bat. He looked like Rambo. And I was like,
you can't look cool, can you? On your fancy.
I remember I was a jester. That's average. It, yeah. But remember Gav Cadwallader? Poor, he was my age, and we were obviously the younger lads, and he was such a shy lad, wasn't he?
And he was stick thin. He was stick thin as well, which was brilliant.
And there was one outfit no one wanted, and it was a PVC nun outfit, wasn't it?
Oh, it was so bad.
Who got that?
And his head. He put the headscarf on, and his skin was pulled back here, and everybody was pulling it. But that, I tell you, that night we went to
Birmingham.
We went to Birmingham.
I was going to say, do you remember the journey? So we all got the train from Shrewsbury, and we were all drunk right from the start. Obviously. We had loads of tinnies on the train.
Yeah.
And at every stop, we were playing card games. If you were left with the ace, by the time the train stopped, you had to get off the train and go and complete 10 burpees before you laid
back on.
So lads were standing at the door saying, you're not coming on, you've got to finish them. And the lads are like going mad on the floor. Yeah. A few of them were really close to getting left, weren't they?
I think, I think Hoggy, wasn't it?
Yeah,
Steve Hogg. Like literally got through and had to pull the door to get himself through.
Oh, it's horrible. That was Gav Cadwallader. Because when you want that to be one of the senior lads, don't you? You don't want to be like a nice young lad who has to wear the PVC.
I know, it was brilliant because he was like, Cad was like stick thin, wasn't he?
Six foot four
in this like PVC outfit. And the whole night, he was just like, he couldn't do anything with it. You know, we adapted all of ours and people were ripping the sleeves off and all of that to try and make themselves look cooler. And he just stood there going, what chance have I got?
did you always go away then? You always went. You never went out in the town where you played for.
No, not for a proper Christmas.
Yeah,
no.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen we did at Sunderland, but I think when I was at Shrewsbury, we never did. I remember going to Nottingham one time when Nigel Jemson was there. Nigel Jemson was like, "I'll sort the Christmas do, lads. I'll sort that." And I was like, "Well done." And we all went to Nottingham, and obviously, like, he took us to a couple of these like posh, like wine bars in Nottingham. But the problem was, obviously, he's like, "Hiya, nice, you know, these are my friends." And obviously, there's 25. He's got Luke Rogers, Ryan Law, Ian Dunbavin, and that was like Jamie Tolley, Darren Moss. I'm like, we cannot be in here. I remember we all caused absolute havoc. I remember Ryan nearly had a fight with Mark Atkins for some reason. I was like over something about getting the wrong drink. Like, Mark Atkins bought a pint of cider. Ryan was trying to fight him and that, and it was all like that. All broke that up. And he just thought it just gets out of hand all the time.
See, Roy Keane said it, didn't he? He said these arguments, these petty, stupid, they never come over breakfast. Do they?
Oh no, it's never. Oh yeah,
it's all over a few beers.
Yeah. Everybody have 10 pints, 25 footballers, put them together. What can possibly go wrong?
Yeah, yeah. But that I remember that night in Birmingham. We had the best night ever, The great thing is as well, when you've got a good group like that, there's nothing worse than when people just start going off on their own agenda. When you all stick together, it's brilliant. And to be fair, we found that Aussie bar, didn't we? Yeah. There was like an Aussie bar that was like, I think that's actually what it's called, isn't it? Aussie bar.
Walkabout.
That's it. And we got in there and they were brilliant. They were like, "Look, lads, like, we know the script." They were really good to us. And they were like, "Look, if any of you are messing around, it won't be one of you. You'll all go." So like, because we were good lads, really, we were like, "Look, we wanted to have a great time, but we were like, yeah, look, come on, let's do it right."
And it's open till like 6 a.m, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. It was ridiculous. And then a few of the older lads, like Mark Stallard and Kevin Sharp and all that, had said, "Come on, let's go for a curry." And it was like really late, and I thought, "Oh, I'll have some of that." So I jumped on it because I just thought, like, it was just getting cut. It was just getting ridiculous.
And the dressed as a pimp.
Yeah, the last thing. I thought I might get
you're,
something.
You're dressed
out
like that in the first day you come to Shrewsbury Town,
Yeah. Everyone thought I was in my normal clothes. The last thing I remember walking away from Walkabout was turning around and just seeing Joe Hart, just stood in his pants where everybody had just basically ripped all of his clobber off, and he was just like that. And the bouncer came over and went, "Where's your clothes?" And he's like, he'd just given up. He couldn't even talk because he was like too drunk and all that. But I always remember this. It's not overly funny, but it's like, I still to this day can't get my head around it. We went for this Indian. And I remember Mark Stallard going, looking through the menu, and he went, "I'll have a fowl, please." And they went, "Oh no, sorry, we don't sell that. It's not on the menu." And he went, no, like, "I'm all right, I'll have a fowl." And they were like, "No, honestly, like, we cannot sell you that because it's just ridiculously hot." Yeah. And so he went, "No, honestly." And they went, "Well, you're going to need to sign something." And they brought a piece of paper out. And obviously he's like bladdered. So he signed this piece of paper. He's gone back out and he's got this fowl. So he goes, "Right, no one talk to me." He's got this pint of water and he's just mopping it up with this naan bread and going for it.
That's cool.
And his face was bright red and he was sweating and he was just going, I was going, "Are you even enjoying that, Stal?" I was like, "It can't be that hot, surely." And obviously being young and an idiot, I was like, "Can't be that hot."
I can imagine,
like,
you doing that.
I went, "Give us a bit of that. I'll have some of that." So I dipped a bit in. And honestly, I didn't even put it in my mouth. I dipped it on my tongue like that. And my tongue swelled up. And that literally, like, it took us about another 3 hours to get home because the taxis and stuff. The whole night, I was like talking like that. The lad's going, "Do you want to go for another drink?" I was going, "Oh, you want a drink? Yeah, no problem." And like, literally, I was in so much pain for about an hour. And he's mopping it up. And to this day, I still can't understand how he ate it and how his insides are still going.
I've seen him last week, Stal.
Did you?
I've seen him for, like, since we played at Shrewsbury. He looks exactly the same.
Oh, yeah. Has he still got his curtains?
Well, nearly. He's got another goal. Yeah, he was at a Notts County game. I was there doing some stuff.
Wow, what a guy. Amazing.
I'll tell you another one about Shrewsbury. So we went to Birmingham. Like Luke. So this time,
It's just when you start the sentence with Luke, yeah, it's like you know what's coming, don't you?
So before we've done Nottingham, Nigel Jemson, like, he's like, "We're not going back to Nottingham." Like, no one's speaking to him. He's banned from both four bars in Nottingham. Like, he's too... So Luke's gone, "Sam, man, don't worry about that, man. I'll sort that, bruv. I'll sort that, man. I know everybody." So we've gone to Birmingham, haven't we? Anyway, so we've gone to the first bar. Ian Dunbavin, I was sitting like this. Ian Dunbavin's got a pint, just walked over, stood there, got a whole pint of lager, just swilled me like that. I threw it all over me like that. I've just gone, "That's a good start, isn't it?" Brilliant. No,
what,
no other top.
What sort of time was this?
That was like, that's 1:30 in the afternoon. Like, anybody, like, if you know, like, you remember a bit of Babbo, on you? He was like ridiculous, like too much. Yeah. No, and someone's too much. I'm like, "Mate, it's 1:30. Yeah. Like, it's not 10:30, it's 1:30 in the afternoon."
Did he ever get like, too much?
Yeah. I'll tell you another story. They just soaked my shirt. I'm like, mate, I've got no like other shirt. It's 1:30 in the afternoon, so I just had to just deal with it. Stank like all day. Anyway, so we've gone around. And even then we've gone back. We've gone back to get changed in Birmingham. So Luke Rogers has done his like. I'm with Luke. Luke's like, all right, yeah, so mate, I was getting ready and all that. Luke's like getting ready, like he does. And he's got his watch. He's got his wallet. He's gone like that. I've gone, what's that? And what's that? He's went, oh man, it's a knuckle duster, man. I've got a knuckle duster. I'm like, what? Like, what do you mean? What do you mean? He's, don't know, man. You know, it's rough round here, man, at the moment, man. And I'm with loads of lads, man. And like, in case, like, I'll not use it. I'm like, mate, what world am I living in? What am I doing when I'm going out where someone, like, I'm like, you know, have you got your wallet? You got your keys? He's like, got your wallet? Got your keys, yeah, got me knuckle duster, yeah, I'm ready, like, left, like, ready for the night out, yeah, like that. Like, that's what Luke was like, but we ended up anyway. It all kicked off inevitably as well. And Greg Rioch, you probably remember Greg Rioch, the left back. So we're all falling out, the lads falling out with each other. Like, I've ended up falling out with Dunbavin later on that night because something else happened. Like, he used to fish hook everybody. Yeah. So he used to be standing there and he'd just, like, put his finger in your mouth and he'd fish hook them. And he'd be like, he must have done it about five so times.
No, this is just his
joke. Oh, this is banter. He thinks it's banter. Like, it's his banter. Like, and he'd go, like, and, like, I'm thinking, like, I'm from the West Newcastle. Like, I'm up for banter. But, like, he's fish hooked me about five times. I'm like, mate, like,
go on, show me what you did. Go on.
Yeah, you go that. Just kept doing that. about five times. And like, I'm like, stop that. And he just didn't stop it. So in the end, like, we ended up having a little bit of a disagreement. And Greg Rioch, because he's steaming, got all emotion. He's like, I'm like, you're like, Greg, yeah. I just hate it when the lads fight. I've gone, come on, Greg, mate, you're a 28-year-old bloke. Like, come on, get on with it.
Have you had many cries? I had a crier to look after for about half hour, Kelv Langmead.
So Kelv Langmead crying, yeah. I mean, he's not going to like that. He's still playing now, he's like 30 years.
No, so he's just...
Don't
he's
film just, that bit, Scott. We can't just, put that bit.
No,
he's... You can't put that on our socials, mate.
He's playing not Kettering
gonna,
as of
he's
yesterday.
He's playing assistant. He's assistant manager at Kettering.
Yeah. It wasn't...
Don't
it
put was, that on. He's no, not going
he
to like that.
The club.
He can't see that, lad.
Kelv is a hard boy, but he's emotionally intelligent as well. So he's like in touch
he's
with...
In touch,
his,
in touch, he's sensitive. With,
yeah, he's a
good
sensitive
thing.
Lad. And we went to get into the club. And as we went in to get into the club, the bats was like, no, mate, you can't come in, you're too drunk. And he was like, I'm not, mate. Honestly, I'm fine. I've honestly... And like the bouncer was over here and he's trying to talk to him here. And they're going, no, mate, you can't even see straight and all of that. And he's gone, no, come on, mate, stop here, I'm going to come in. And as the bouncer's gone to stop him and gone, calm down, mate, pushed him a little bit and he's ripped the button off his shirt. And that was it. He floods of tears. He's going...
Oh, he's going... You can't see. I'm expecting that. Like,
he would know.
Kelvin would be going to his team and all that. Like, hey, if anybody steps up to you, you give them that and all that.
Oh,
like,
no, no.
Like you do when someone ripped your shirt, you start crying.
He'd be the first one there. But yeah, he was just mortified because he was like, all the lads are in there and I want to get in there. And, and they're going, look, mate, you're not coming in. He's going, but you ripped my shirt. he was gone. He was like, and I couldn't get him round. I was going, mate, if you just stop crying, we might be able to get in. He's like, oh, I don't even like me. Oh God.
Just quickly before we mention, the last one I mentioned was one time we did go out in Shrewsbury and Ryan Lowe. And we were out in Shrewsbury, that was like must have been one that probably wasn't even a Christmas do because I'm sure we went away every time. But it was probably about December time. So we're walking around. And we ended up getting in a bit of an argument with a few lads, the lads from the Rock, probably the lads from the Rock and that were around town and everything. So we had a little bit of, anyway, an argument, not location. Anyway. Like Ryan's going, what's the matter in this place? Like, we're from Shrewsbury. They should love us from Shrewsbury. I was like, mate, we've lost four on the spin. Like, shut your mouth, like, calm down. Calm down.
Don't keep telling people.
What was it like Wolves though, Dave, when he got, because... It's like when you got if you got some big hitters,
yeah,
is it a bit different?
I think a lot of different era. It becomes a bit more of a status night out, I think, when it comes out. Because you've got lads, especially
when
we were getting...
Instagram, what do you mean, pause?
Not that? Before that, but I think as we got into the Premier League in those years there, it's all about who can organise the best night, the best club.
Dave, you
everything.
Played in the Premier League.
That's a long time ago. It's a long
like
time ago.
I forget because obviously we're all close and I love Dave. But you played in the Premier League. That is mad, isn't
it? So did I.
Yeah, but you didn't really. You came on a sub a couple of times. But it is amazing. You both played in the Premier League. When you say it like that, it's amazing. Yeah. You played in the top flight.
But we were chatting before, and I always thought the best Christmas do's would I prefer to be rocked up in here.
Yeah,
that's what I was about to come on to.
Drinking beers and talking and hearing each other. But all of a sudden, we were going to London.
In the Prem as well.
Spending, an absolute fortune.
Well, tell me what the kitty was like. What was the kitty be? Well, so you're on the Prem, so you got lads on 15 grand a week, 20 grand a week.
This is where I was going when I was saying about, like, you played in the Premier League and that. I was just about to say, so, like, in terms of this, like you've got obviously that, you would choose that over, like, in terms of playing career, you choose the Premier League all day. But in terms of those nights out, like, Gordon, so you're saying, like, you've got this kitty.
Yeah, so you have a decent-sized kitty anyway, because the fines are obviously more larger.
What's decent? Yeah, give me some numbers.
I want digits, Dave.
It would kind of be, I don't know.
For Christmas, 15 grand.
15 grand, something like that.
Wow. 15 grand kitty for Christmas,
too. It didn't really, it sounds
25
silly.
Lads.
To be fair, me and you spend that in the sloping.
The lads wouldn't mind that going straight away, because then they'd just say, right, everyone chip in. They'd be like, they'd say it so easily, and I'm tight as cramp.
He's tight as anything.
But they would like, they would just say, right, run out of money, everyone chuck 500 quid in. I'm like, I'm never drinking 500 quid's worth of drink. And I start to question.
Everyone chuck 500. So wait, what happened if you're an 18-year-old? You still have to chuck your 500.
Nah, they would look after you.
Yeah, because they used to look after us like when we were kids.
But in general, the nights, so I went to London, we would spend on the Saturday night, we'd get there straight after a game, 10 grand on a table, and we'd be there, there'd be big bottles of vodka, big bottles of whiskey, amaretto. I'm sat there with a Peroni.
I'm not getting my money's worth here. This is like...
but everyone disperses. You know what young lads are like? They're
looking
for girls.
Yeah, of course
you
do. Yeah, everyone splits
like
up. Of course you are, yeah.
And it's just not
young
as
lads,
much. It's
young
just,
lads looking for girls.
Yeah, he said he's got that in there, hasn't he? Because he knew
like
he was... You were sat there with your Peroni.
Water.
Of course, mate. It's
just not as much fun as when you go to... just a booze.
Because it's all for show. It's a bit pointless, isn't it? Yeah. Like, you get these, like, they bring out the Grey Goose with the flames
coming out and you just think,
I'm not even going to drink half of that.
Yeah.
But, Tolly, obviously, Jamie Tolly was best mates with Joe Hart. So he, obviously, typical Jamie Tolly, gets everywhere. So he went to two of the Man City Christmas parties. Yeah. He was telling me about it. So he's gone the Man City Christmas parties, and he went with Aguero and company and all that. So obviously, the same things happen. Like, they're getting rounds in. So there's about 15 of them. They all stood there. Like, so he said, as the night's gone on, there's about 15 and a bit later on. Company's like, anybody want a drink? Yeah, Peroni and all that. We'll get a bottle of Grey Goose, or we'll get whatever like that. So the bills come in. So then, like, the rounds are getting silly. So then, like, Joe's like looking at you, and Toddy's gone, and either got the company's now gone, your mate needs to get a drink in. So Tolly's sitting there and he's going, oh, fuck yeah. No. And look, the round's going to be about 700 quid. And he's going, oh, yeah, I haven't got 700 quid to get this round in. He said it was an absolute nightmare. So in the end, company's going to Joe, mate, if your mate's going to come, he's got to start buying some drinks. Jamie just went, I'm not going to go anymore. But it is too much, isn't it? Like, when you're a young lad, like, 500
they would
quid.
Always, they would always get looked at.
Yeah, I'm used to it, son.
That was just an example. We had some amazing nights out as well. Always the best ones are in Dublin, because you can have more of that sort
always.
Of atmosphere where you're just in pubs all day long, drinking Guinness all day, and they're a great laugh. And when we first went up at Wolves, Mick McCarthy was always great for Christmas do's. If you're winning, if you're losing...
He's old school though, isn't he? Like Peter Reid, like they want the lads to have a Christmas party.
Get it booked in, as long as you don't cause any trouble, you go.
Yeah.
But his rule was, you'll always come in train the next day.
Yeah.
So we go Saturday night, we go Sunday night, I want you in on Monday. He said, it won't be a hard session, but just start to sweat it out.
Just to make sure everybody's all right. Make sure everyone's alive, not arrested.
Come back in the morning and then get yourself to the training ground for 1 o'clock. We'll do a light session, go home, and then we'll train properly on the Tuesday. And one of my funniest stories, I think I've said it on the podcast before, we'd been into Dublin, we got picked up from Birmingham Airport Monday morning in a minibus or two minibuses. We're going on the M6, we hit some traffic. by Junction 8, you know, where the RAC thing and stuff, always traffic along there. So I sat there, all hanging, heads up against the window, feel horrible. We had a lad called Graham Stack in our team. He was an absolute
I know him. I don't think people would know Graham Stack. Is
honestly like wild. He's like Favo, but on steroids. So whilst everyone else is dying, they just want to go home. He's looking out the window and he spots like it's a van with like a low loader trailer behind it and there's a motorbike on it, a bit like a Harley, big handlebars and stuff like that. He's like, traffic's not going anywhere at this point. He says, I reckon I can get on that bike and back off by the time the traffic moves. And the lad's like, nah, you won't. And he loves being
the lads are obviously going to go, bet you don't.
All of a sudden, all the lads then are kind of waking up a little bit. And they're saying, oh, go on then, Stacky, you do it. And he's like, nah. He goes, go on, Stacky, you said you'd do it. So in the end, he's like, stuff it. Opens the door, slides it open, goes on the back of this low loader, gets on this bike on the M6 in the middle, three lanes of traffic. He's on the handlebars. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, the traffic just clears.
Okay.
And he starts taking off, and he's on the M6 on the back. On the back of his bike. And it, no word of a lie, it must have gone for 400 or 500 yards before we stopped again, and he quickly hopped off and got back on the bus.
So he got away with it, really. Yeah, he got lucky.
Imagine that, seeing someone on the M6 on the back of on a Monday morning.
That'd be unbelievable, wouldn't it?
Yeah. But that's what he said. On the Christmas do's, everybody would try and outdo each other, though, wouldn't they? Like, we used to have that all the time. I was like, oh, we've got it. Oh, mate, yeah, haven't we?
Who have we got here? Yeah. We've got a guest.
Is he on time? Just
oh,
about.
It's a fine for him. I'll find him. Yeah. It's a fine.
Come
Daniel.
On in. Here we go. Udo.
I told you, I'll pass. Yeah.
Daniel, come and grab a seat, mate. Come and grab a seat. Can we get you a drink or anything? Right, our guest has arrived. Born in Lagos, Nigeria, on the 30th of August. Summer born, isn't he, as well? Tough. It is Shrewsbury Town star centre forward, Daniel Odoh. Can we have a round of applause, please, for Daniel? On the back of an absolute left foot rocket at the weekend, and I've just heard you say, Gavin, Daniel's a better finisher with his left foot than his right.
Yeah, it has been known. We've just been talking there. Like you were saying, weren't you? I'll let you explain. But like, whether it's left or right, it seems like you just been overworking it, and then just managed to find a technique. But you spoke about it better than me.
Yeah, it's just one of them things. Just because I've been, like you said, working on it so much and wanting it to be the difference. You know what it's like being the manager, being players, where a team's like, show him on his right foot, that's all he's got. So from young, I always just thought, just keep working on my left foot, just by swinging. And then now it's just come to a point where I don't have to think of it. And just smash it in. So.
But there is definitely more of, it's my weaker foot, so I've got to concentrate a little bit harder on connection.
Yeah. I think it's like, you get, like you said, and then you get to that, you have that one technique that you know that if I catch it like this, it's on target, I've got half a chance.
You scored about 7 or 8 like that for me.
Yeah.
Like, absolute, like, edge of the box, roll, left foot.
Him rolling onto his left side, you always prefer to roll
to
that
go
way.
That way,
well.
Yeah. So even like, throwing...
My last season at Shrewsbury, in training all the time, I was always on like the reserve team, and then I would go to centre-back and mark him, and I used to hate it. If he could feel me,
really?
I knew I was in banging trouble, because he'd just get his arm round, he'd roll, strong. And you just couldn't live with him.
But you wouldn't do a cultured finish with your left foot. Your left foot, you're going to smash it more often than not.
More often
don't give
than
your
not.
Secrets away, unless, but to your left foot, you're going to smash it.
Unless I'm really, like, I've got enough space and time to have to think, and I can see the keeper gambling that I'm going to smash it.
But it's on your right, you're going to
invariably,
twist
you go, with your left, you always go across, don't you?
Yeah.
We can't give him too much away, can we? Keepers listening, they're going, right, are you just going to smash it and go
not,
in there?
Not count these keepers listening to this.
So, you moved to England at 9?
Yeah.
Done a bit of research, haven't I, there as well? And you played for Luton for a little bit as a young lad. Mm-hmm. Then you did an apprenticeship with Stevenage.
Yeah.
So what was that like then? So 16 there. Mm-hmm. How was that?
It was the norm for me then, like with football, how football's changed. Like you see the young boys nowadays, like the jobs they have to do compared to the jobs, I don't know. I think our era, well, my age group was the last where you boys' youth team would have been like where you get told you're doing this.
We were painting the stands at Sunderland.
Exactly. Yeah. Like if we got in trouble, I remember one of the young boys, we were in the same building as the first team, and one of them, like, he was thirsty, summer pre-season, drank one of the first team bottles, got caught.
Yeah.
Every one of us. Yeah. You run into the Lamex Stadium, get to the Lamex Stadium, wait there, all up and down the stairs, back round, every round, twice, run back. And it's like 5 p.m. and yeah, all right, you can go home now. And we get there at 8:30. So everything was like, it was just, our manager was Darren Tarr, and he was like proper old there. Then we had Graham Wesley as the first team manager. Yeah. So imagine, yeah. Imagine like both
it's
of them.
Isn't it?
Exactly.
What was he like then, to Graham Wesley?
Ah.
Because I, nightmare. Are you allowed, it's hard. You know what's hard? When you've got current players asking them questions because they're reluctant to say, because you're never really going to criticise them too much because you don't know what's going
to
happen.
I have a funny one with him. I went to play a game with the first team, so youth team versus first team, and a player, Lee Hill, was marking me. I was playing right wing and I'm getting the best out of him, and then like I'm on the side with Graham Wesley. Graham Wesley's going, Lee, tame that tiger, come on, yeah. Tame that tiger. Like, I'm 17 years old, I'm here, tame that tiger. I'm going, what's going on here?
Well,
and like, the mad stories you used to hear about him, and you'd go over to the first team and he had the run called 90s. You start on one, like, you have to run pitch lengths for so long and you had to get in. I can't remember what it was, but if you didn't get in, you couldn't go and train with the first team. So all of us as youth teams used to think, we need to get in to make sure we're with them. And every time, like we did, you'd get up with him and he'd put his arm around you for a bit. And then afterwards, you'd just like get the first team boys to humiliate you a bit and then go, yeah, this is it. You're with us now.
Character building.
Yeah. That's what... That's
massive on it, wasn't it?
Not so much now, but...
That's what my youth team days was
did
like.
Did you think, like, your childhood being in Nigeria then, when you come over to England, did that help you, set you up for that then? Like,
yeah.
Was it tough? Was it easy? What was it like? What's it like living in Nigeria?
It was tough because, obviously, I'm from a hard-working background, as most of us are, but, like, my mum and dad were constantly away working, so, like, when I was getting, like, different things like that at football, the other boys would be complaining, but I was just buzzing.
Yeah, like, I'm just lucky to be here.
I'm playing football, I'm enjoying it, I'm getting paid. We were getting paid £300 a month then. Didn't need it for anything. I think I only had the phone bill to pay then.
Yeah.
And the rest was, you'd go Zara and then you'd go Watford Ocean.
You get four of Sam's tracks.
I don't like negativity from you, mate. I've not mentioned that card again, but I've mentioned it, but not a lot.
Boiling, I tell you.
Yeah, and that was just, football was just like my main release and what I used to enjoy with my mates and just...
Do you feel pressure, you think, when you're playing there?
The only pressure I felt was probably because I knew my mum and dad had worked to bring us
to get you over to England. Why did he move over then?
Just for... Like, he was already here before we moved over with him, and just for, like, a better life, because, I don't know, let's use the currency now. A pound is, like, 1,000 naira, so you weigh that up, you come over here, you earn £1,000.
Yeah,
of course. You're doing well back home.
Yeah. So then you had your apprenticeship at Stevenage, but did you sign pro there?
No.
So you got released from there?
Yeah. I'll never forget that day. So I got... told by Darren Saab, yeah, we're not giving you a contract. And you think, like, you've been working so hard to be a professional, but not everyone's going to be a professional. I think only two people got a pro then. Fajiri Okunaburi, funny enough, one of them, and another lad. And I just remember walking down to the train station, crying to my dad on the phone because I felt like I'd disappointed him.
At 18, this is?
Yeah, felt like I'd disappointed him because he, like, you know what it's like as parents. You take your kids everywhere to make sure you give them the best chance and don't get a pro, and it's like, you know, what am I going to do next?
And that's what, like, as a fan, like, you don't realise, like, no. It is so brutal, isn't it? But it's also so powerful, that story, to say, like, that's at 18, that's not at 7, 8, 9, that's at 18, and you think, like, where you are now, and you think, you just told... Nah, you're not good enough.
Yeah.
See you.
But your mindset then is, right, back to work, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was literally...
Your journey from there is incredible.
But it was not... You bounced around a lot of non-league clubs, didn't you, for a long time?
Yeah, just because, like, I always had that belief in myself that, like...
You need to, don't you? You need that.
no, like, even if one manager didn't think I was good enough, the next one might. So I have to make sure I'm on top of my game. It was weird because when I was at Luton, I was at the development centre, not the actual academy. So it was Centre of Excellence and Development Centre. So I was at Development Centre, and Centre of Excellence used to train, I don't know, 3 times a week, and we used to train twice. But then I'd make sure, because like I didn't want to feel like I was missing out or like making sure I was close enough to the other boys, I'd go and train by myself twice. So we'd train on a Tuesday, Thursday, but I'd train on a Monday and a Friday just to make sure I'm making up for it, because they were getting the best coaches and more hours. And I've always been a big believer in hours and like more practice and practice. And you know, he used to stop me from training.
Oh, my God.
I remember you telling me.
I'll tell you
what. I remember you telling me about him. You told me.
He used to drive me inside. So I'm driving out of Lillishaw, and obviously my business is based.
Obviously, just so everybody knows, and then you played a few, and obviously then Gavin was manager of Telford and signed Daniel for Telford, and then basically then helped get you to Shrewsbury, didn't he? And then so basically you're taking credit for Daniel.
Yeah, basically. Basically, I was the mastermind. Yeah. I remember coming out, and obviously we trained Tuesday, Thursday nights, and. Actually, then we trained on a Monday morning as well, didn't we? So we tried to make it hybrid, and like some of the lads who wanted to be this, we'd probably get 3/4 of the squad. And this is a Friday now, so the day before a game, and I'm driving out, and I'm looking over, and I'm thinking, there's two lads there doing parachute runs. So it was parachutes, basically, you put it around your waist, and you run, and the parachute, harder to run, and it increases your speed. So I'm thinking, no one does parachute runs on a Friday. And I'm going, that's Daniel. So I've literally got cars behind me on the road out from the golf club. I've abandoned the car, jumped over the fence. Stop. Daniel! Daniel! I turn around. All right, gaffer. Not really, mate, no. What are you doing?
Stop.
He's like, doing some parachute runs. Like, come Stop. Over here. So I had to take my car, move it. I went, wait there. And you were with your brother, weren't you?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
His brother's like making, like working him hard and all of that. What are you doing? And I remember you saying to me, the thing is, gaffer, with me, is I'm like, if I keep going, I will get stronger. I don't need that. I know when I need my rest, and I need to train every day.
You felt like you needed that.
Yeah. But you're doing parachute runs. You're going, that's what I need to be ready. And that's probably, for me, like as an aspiring manager, like manager at the time, I start to understand that like what I needed and probably kidded myself is like more rest, the better. So it means I'm not working hard and doing loads of runs. But Daniel's mentality was, like, I need to prepare, and this is, I know, I'm not kidding myself, I need to be running and be strong, and I'm like, I need to just keep my legs going.
Mm. It's like, I just felt like, at the time, I'd experienced so much ups and downs and stuff like that,
yeah,
and always tried to watch people in my position, listen to them and stuff like that. I came across an interview with Rooney in it, obviously, not comparing myself anywhere near Rooney, by the way, but he just said he had to keep going. Like, when he had, I don't know, 2 days, 3 days off, he'd come back into training and he'd just feel like a bag of washing.
Yeah.
Like, just feel like a sack.
Yeah.
And didn't feel good enough. And that's how I used to feel. Like, when we had 3 days, 4 days off, that's why, like, some days in training when they go, oh, you boys that have played today, you'll have a rest now. And I'll be like, nah, I need to just, even if it's just some strides outside, let's just do that, just play some football.
He's got a relentless work rate, honestly, ridiculous. I've seen him in a full-time environment, so this is away from him doing extra work on days off. Even every day at Shrewsbury, always staying out, like finishing every single day. And you're getting dragged in every day. Fitness coach hates you because he's the same. Like
fitness coach is trying to have a day off. He's going, I want to go shopping with the missus. Yeah. And he's like, Daniel just called me, you're okay to come in tomorrow.
he'll have an iPad full of data and he'll be saying, right, so-and-so can hit this amount of kilometres this week and this amount of high-speed running. And he'd be over on everything, but he's still out there doing it. And they're kind of the experts that's trying to get you in. But say, so you know your body, you know what you need.
It's not even knowing your body. Sorry, Gav. It's not even knowing your body, is it? It's because you need that mentally.
Yeah.
So if you don't do that, you're mentally not right, are you? So you feel rubbish. Whether physically it helps you or not, mentally you need it.
I don't know what you were like as players, but like before I go to sleep most nights, I have my day planned for training. So like we know what the coaches are going to have their time and their schedule and whatever, but I know, all right, I get in this time, I'm having breakfast, I've got this window to have breakfast and go and stretch and foam roll, do some core, then I'm out and I want to work on 20 finishes today, work on heading, I hardly do that. Work on heading or work on something that I need to work on. So then, like, I have it pre-planned before I go to sleep. I'm thinking of these things. So then when I do it, I know that, I've won today because I've done what I planned to do. And then
if you can't do it, are you kind of...
Yeah, if I can't do it, I'm mentally pulling the fitness coach or, like, one of the coaches and going, I wanted to do this because, like, look, on the weekend we didn't score and... How are we going to score if we're not practicing?
I think for any supporter and like any sort of manager, that's all you can ask from your players, isn't it? That
be
relentless
prepared.
Work rate, preparation, dedication, and like Daniel's wife actually works for me as well. And we were joking the other day because I was talking about Daniel's like relentless work rate and all this, and she was saying, I can't even, like she says it in her Scouse accent, which is quite funny. I can't even get Daniel to sit and watch the TV with me because he's on the floor doing his foam roller and he's like literally doing his stretching. And she's going, can you just come and sit on the sofa and maybe we can watch the TV? And Daniel's like, I'm all right down here. I'm all right down here.
As a manager though, he's a manager. True. So like Matt can't say to you, you need to do this. Matt's just like, how can I help you even more, isn't he? Because you can't do any more. You're like, I'm doing the best. I've trained as much as I can. Mm-hmm. I'm doing everything I possibly can. I'm as prepared as I possibly can be. So it's just fine-tuning that. How do we fit that into the system, isn't it?
Yeah,
you can't do anything more to be prepared then.
And, like, obviously, going back to how my career started and stuff, so obviously when I got released by Stevenage, I was looking for opportunity to just get into men's football and just play football. So I don't remember how it come about. An agent just rang me and said, I've got this opportunity in Kidminster if you want to go on trial there. Went to a manager called Gary Wild.
Gary Wild
signed me on a non-contract thing and non-contract. And I remember like Kidminster.
Gary Wild is like someone who's in non-league. And he literally knows the inside leg measurement and the boot size of every footballer through non-league and League Two. So, like, it doesn't surprise me he picked you up.
Yeah, and then he signed me, and I just because, like I said, about disappointing my dad or feeling like I disappointed my dad or not living up to what I wanted to do. Like, I remember going from London every morning just to train at Kidney. I don't know how long it was. It felt normal. So I had a mate that was doing it with me at first, and he went, nah, it's getting too much. We're not getting paid. It's £50 petrol, like, there and back. Like, it's getting too much. When do you think you're going to stop this? Because we're not getting any game time as well. I just said, come on, man. Like, it'll come to
resilience.
Fruition at some point.
Yeah,
do you mean?
Mate,
like, it'll come good at some point. And my dad was like, yeah, he is right, to be fair. Petrol's getting a lot. So I said, all right. I checked the train from Marylebone Station to Kiddie. It was like 3 a.m. You had to be at the train station. So I'd go with my dad, because he was a cleaner at the time, at Marble Arch, get on the train from Marylebone to Birmingham Moore Street, walk to New Street, get on the next train that links you to Kiddie, just to make training for 10 o'clock. And the other boys are all fresh and stuff. And I'm knackered.
Yeah.
I just act like I'm fresh. Yeah, yeah. How you doing? Like,
are you doubting yourself, Dan, at this time? Are you thinking I'm not good enough here? Like, do I jack it in?
I think I was too young to even have that.
So you thought I'm just going to keep going and I'll get my rewards.
Yeah. I think I was too young and I didn't even like think it was all or nothing basically.
So
I didn't know anything else.
Rather thinking of all the hard work it's going to take to get there, you were grateful to have the opportunity to go somewhere
just,
to train.
Yeah, to be
great mindset
in the professional environment. And it was a conference, Prem, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And that's where I met like Shay Dunkley and people like that. And I was just buzzing to train with them and get back on the train and just
so then
be
crew,
a footballer.
Did crew then signed you?
No.
So tell me how you got the crew, because crew was like your big breakthrough.
Yeah, I'll try and make it short. So Kidminster went on trial to Stourbridge. Manager watched me train for a day. Nah, not having you.
Not good enough.
Signed for Worcester, who were playing at Kiddies Ground at the same time. Manager played me some games, didn't play me. 5 games in, I said, nah, this isn't it. Like, the striker that was playing, like, was a handful. At the time, because I was young, I probably thought I was better than him. But, like, the older you get, you realise he was really good at his job. Like, he'd make everything stick, he'd head it in.
The lump.
Like, he was that big striker that used to play for Lincoln. Matt.
Yeah, the
Matt Reed.
Yeah.
He's the one who took out.
Don't mention him around here.
Yeah, he took him out, didn't he, in the final, didn't he? But like, also, you know how effective that is. Exactly. So if you're a manager, you go, I'm picking him. Yeah. He's playing.
Instead of a young raw.
He's a terrible footballer, but what a focal point and what a handful.
He really wasn't a bad footballer. Like, yeah, like you say,
I don't mean terrible footballer.
He's a big sloth, isn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah.
The player's name, I can't remember his name now, but he played for Hereford after that as well. He was playing and I was like, nah, I'm better than him. Yeah. So I'm going back home. I've had enough of this now. 6 months in. So I go and sign for Wingate in Finchley, around the corner from my mum and dad's in Edgware. Played there, played an under-21s game, thought the same thing again, better than most of these boys, I'm not staying here, I'm not playing. Yeah. Went to Grays Athletics, got there, and same thing happened, and I was just like, all right, you've gone there, and you've blamed the manager, or you've blamed the player wasn't good enough, or you blamed someone else. Like, all right, it's time to look at yourself now.
Amazing.
Like, and just spoke to one of my mates, he was playing like, I don't know, Isthmian League.
Yeah.
Like, Evo Prickstick Sellotape League.
Yeah, basically. Basically. And
no disrespect to any of your players. Yeah.
I just said, listen, like, speak to your manager. I'll come on trial and train with you boys. And I just want to play football. I don't care what level it is. You don't have to pay me. Just want to play. So then went there, trained, done well. And he said, listen, I'll pay you £20. Every time you come, £20 every time you scored. Played 11 games, got 10 goals. Like, just felt like,
yeah.
I was like, where's my money?
knock on my manager's door.
Yeah.
Eyeing up a new track.
So. No. Yeah. So done that. Was just enjoying football to the end of the season again. And then went on trial to Ilkeston with, what's his name's son?
Kevin Wilson, was it?
No, Strachan.
Gavin Strachan was Gordon Strachan. So he played, didn't he, as well? Yeah. You know him both,
yeah,
and he played.
Yeah, so went with him. He was good because Ilkeston had, they just sold Shea Adams and Ash Hunter. So like all good the young team, boys were going through there, and it was like full time. So perfect for me, away from home, just focusing on football again. Went there, enjoyed myself. Then Neil Baker from Crewe seen me when we played against Leek and was just like, I like him. Crewe basically already relegated and got moved to Crewe. And
Dave Artell?
Yeah. No, Steve Davis first.
Oh, right.
Yeah, Steve Davis
he
first.
Was at Wolves then,
yeah,
wasn't
yeah,
as well.
Yeah.
Your friend, mate.
He played for Shrewsbury.
When Bruno Lage left Wolves, he was interim manager until Lofton-Davie came.
I'm sure he played for Shrewsbury.
Wasn't he interim manager? Of course he was.
Him and James Collins, who's there as well, the under-23's manager, them two signed me up. They just wanted someone like raw, with a bit of pace that they
could. That was a massive breakthrough for you, that. I bet you were buzzing, weren't you?
It was dad buzzing. It was probably the best thing that happened for me because at the time, everyone knows Crewe for the academy, how good it was, and I was still a raw non-league player, and they just wanted to fine-tune me. So we'd all stay after. If you're under 21, you'd have to stay and do a second session while the older boys would go. And like, to me, that was music because that's all I wanted to do, just keep playing and training.
Like you had your first kind of, you'd had knock back, and this was your first.
That was my first win.
Belief.
Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Maybe I could do this. Yeah. Do you mean? And then afterwards, spent 2.5 years there, not really getting much football, and just got released there, and then the big man, Corp, gave me a
call. Go on, this is what we want to get to, didn't we? So you've had a little high at Crewe. You've got like buzzing, but it hasn't quite worked out.
Mm.
And then, so what's happened? Gavin Cowan's given you a call.
So at first,
I normally ignore them, but you've obviously took the call.
To be fair, like obviously because Crewe at the time were League Two, but I signed for them in League One, played a few games, and then League Two. But I've been on loan to almost everywhere: Halesowen, Chester, and Solihull.
So are you thinking you might have to drop out the league then?
Yeah, so I'm thinking Conference Prem at least. I've been in League Two, Conference Prem at least. And then
which is still tough to take, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. So I'm thinking, I'll get a call from one of these managers. The Boston manager calls me. I was like, nah, not going there. Not a chance. Gav calls me. Yeah, this is the plan. I've got this.
Oh, Gav, man. Is it not Gaffer anymore now? Someone's got a bit comfortable. That's all right.
Gives me a call.
The salesman.
I've got this. Yeah. This is how I'm going to do it.
He's good with that.
I'll tell you what happened, right? So basically, Daniel was playing for Leamington. And like, it's important, obviously, as a manager, it's all about 3 points. But you've also got to be thinking bigger picture. So over the course of you play against people that you think, or you see players and you think, right, I'll make a note of them. So they go in your notebook. And I saw Daniel, and it's funny, I spoke to the manager at Leamington at the time, and he was like, yeah, a bit raw and like hit and miss and all of that. And I was thinking, like, it's all wrong. And it was just the one that stuck in my head, and I just had an immediate connection. And like, it was a bit strange, because when Gary Peters signed me, I was on loan at Nuneaton. And I always remember he came down from the stand at the end of the game, and I didn't even know who he was at the time. I think I've said this on the podcast. And as we were coming off, we'd won 2-0. And as I'm trying to walk down the tunnel, I've just got someone like barging up against me, and like, and I'm going, "Are you all right, mate?" And like, give him a bit of a push. I'm like, flipping weirdo. Walk down.
Which Gary is still Peters. True,
he was a weirdo. Yeah. But what he'd done is he'd come to watch me on a couple of occasions, not that I knew, and he wanted to get up against me to see how big I was. So he'd sort of roughen me up in the tunnel. But with Daniel, Daniel would come into the players' lounge, and I'd sort of try to be around him. And get
just to see what he's like as a character.
Yeah, be around him and sort of be close and sort of almost stuff, like see how big he was and like.
Can I say that's really important, that isn't it? Obviously, when you sign the player, like you want to, like we do it at school now, you do social media checks and everything. You just want to see him in that player's lounge with his family, see how he interacts and see what he's like as a person.
Yeah, massively. Yeah. And then we'd sort of had the call, and you'd gone on holiday to Bali, didn't you?
Yeah.
Oh, so you obviously made a few quid somewhere.
It was cheap back then.
He'd run out of credit on his phone because he didn't answer for about 2 weeks. He's like, yeah. So obviously, and then you'd come back. And we just got into the conversation, and it was like, look, just give me the and then it was like, it was a little bit too good to be true, because I'd say, where are you living then? Like, obviously, I was thinking, oh, God, if he's in London or whatever. He's like, I'm living in Telford. I was like,
oh,
say again? He's like, I'm living in Telford. I was like...
And that was it for me as well, because in the meantime, while all that was happening, my parents moved from...
This is incredible.
My parents moved from London to Telford while I was still living in Nantwich.
Well, like, what was the...
Just to be closer to me with football and... my dad made a bit of money from the house he sold in London and thought, where could like buy a house and move the family to?
So from Daniel's dad's words were, don't want to be on your, because obviously we don't want to embarrass you and be right on your toes, but if we move to Telford, we'll be close enough to be close to you, but not close enough to embarrass you
interfere.
Which I think is amazing, by the way. But so then, yeah, I got Daniel and I said, listen, bring the whole family. Bring everyone. When I said the whole family, I didn't realise mum was coming, dad was coming, brothers were coming, like everyone was there. And then it was just like, I was like, do you know what? I've just got a great... But my big thing with Daniel was, like, and I did, and that's when I did do the sales pitch, but it was genuine. It wasn't like I was trying to sell something that wasn't there. Mm. The one thing you have with Telford is they have like a good stadium for the level. And I was really passionate about what we were doing. And I was like, listen, Daniel, I see your attributes. I know what you're good at. And I think I can make you better. And the reason I feel like, and it's not rocket science, I'm not trying to make myself out to be Pep Guardiola, but I always looked at Daniel and I always realised that he would start on the outside and run from out to in and always running into the traffic. And I always just thought with the formation that we want to play, and I love to play a 3-4-3 or a 3-5-2, and I said to you, didn't I? Mm. We will get you running into out and you will see the whites of the goal in your eyes and that is your strength. Like people say to me now about Daniel, I think Daniel can play in the 10. I don't see that. I think like you are capable, of course, and you have your touch and how you hold the ball up and finding pockets and all of that great stuff is improved. But everything for me is like you getting into your stride. And when we look at some of the goals, like your goal against Fleetwood and the goal against, who was it where you ran from the halfway line in early days, one of your first goals?
Accrington,
that goal.
Yeah. Last week.
Everything for Daniel Portville is being the whites of the goal is in his eyes, strong running, like sharp. And that for me is where I just said, look, and then we can get you, like, then what we will do is we'll play certain patterns and we'll get you on the edge of the box and rolling people. And that it was literally that simple.
And we did that at Telford. I remember coming to watch you at Telford. The amount of time you'd get the ball and roll it and finish, wouldn't you? And you're like...
But we used to do that strategically, didn't we? We would build up to that. And that would be something that we would get into them areas and we'd go in behind the fullback, down the side of the centre half, and we would have numbers, like numbers down the sides, numbers in the box, front seven, back three, and everything would be strategic to get Daniel, like either in the box or when we were playing for round, and when we were playing through, it'd get him on the edge of the box, and then Daniel just started, like just caught fire, didn't you?
Gav did probably believe in you, Daniel, because I remember that you scored a couple of goals, and I'd come and watch Telford with my boys. I remember you saying to me, Shrewsbury might be interested. He could play for Shrewsbury. And I was like, oof, mate, it's a big thing that is, isn't it? You know, and I've seen him get on the half turn. I was like, Shrewsbury's different to Telford, isn't it? It's a jump that. And I'm like, mate, I don't know. And you were like, mate, he could play for Shrewsbury. And I'm going, oh, I don't know about that then, mate.
Well, Sam Ricketts called me and he went, what do you think? And I said, mate, I'm telling you now, it's the easiest money you'll ever spend. Like, you'll be calling me in a couple of years thanking me. Yeah. And actually, since then, I think, Dave, you were talking to the head of recruitment somewhere recently, saying, like, he was talking to you, going, oh, we like that. And you were going, whoa, you're not going near him. He's a Shrewsbury player and all of that. But actually, you were saying as well, like, what an amazing pro he is and how fantastic he is and all of that sort of...
From seeing Dan at Shrewsbury and seeing how hard he works, so he naturally is going to get better and better and better. And what I always say about Dan is that even if he has the worst game ever, he will still be a 7 out of 10 because of what he does off the ball and how hard he works for the team. So you could be having a stinker on the ball, you'll still offer the team something.
And any manager worth his salt as well, and I even say it to him, I know it's a different, like, a lower level and Conference North, and I know you're very respectful of the level and understand that the players there are very good and, you know, the way things are done now are incredible at that level. Like, even now, I say to them lads, look, just go out, play with courage, play with freedom, but play within the way that we're trying to play. And listen, if it doesn't come off, literally to one of my wing-backs I was saying the other day, just the worst thing you can do, like, just literally run at him. Just do everything you have. Be positive. Get down the outside. And the worst thing you can do is tackle you. Like, literally, and then that's all I ask of you. And if it's not your day, and then the other week we played against Tamworth, and it was a performance I will not accept because we just did not commit to what it is that we were trying to do. Like, hard work, desire, doing a job and a half. Something I won't accept. And then the following week, they give everything. And some of the players weren't there in terms of ability. You know, they didn't have the greatest day, but they gave everything. And you just go, well, that's all I ask.
I think that's for me as a player, that's like, I've been taught from young, like, especially with my dad, it'd take me everywhere I wanted to go to for football. If we had to go to Norwich and play against Norwich, it'd take me there. But he wouldn't accept it if I didn't run hard. He wouldn't tell me you didn't finish that or you didn't play properly or you didn't pass the ball well.
We see it all the time here. Yeah. Daniel, we see it all the time. Like, absolutely.
He wouldn't mention anything about my game if I didn't run hard enough or work hard enough or try my hardest. It'd lose his head and be like, you're wasting my time because I could have gone to a shift basically and gone to do work and stuff like that. But then going back on to Telford, I remember when I first signed, obviously being released from Crewe, wanting to prove that I can bounce back again.
Good enough.
And I'm good enough to play at that level. I just worked so hard that off-season, and it just worked out perfect because family were in Telford. Telford wanted to sign me. I've been working hard all summer, start the season with flying. The big man's, like, bringing out all these tactics and tactics board and stuff like that. I'm like, I'm not sure about this at this level, man. Let us just go out and play. Yeah. It was a bit like, class. For me at the time, it was like, this is too much. But then the more you start seeing the boys start picking it up and understanding it, I was like, this isn't too bad, this. Like, the boys start to understand. Like, we used to do patterns almost every Tuesday, Thursday. Sometimes you'd be like, oh, come on. But then he was relentless as well and getting it done. Jamie getting it done all the time. And then to see it click in the match. And
get more goals on a Saturday.
And yeah, it starts working. And then you go into the next training session. I'm like to the boys, come on, make sure you do it properly because I know if we do it properly, I get into the spaces where I get to have a chance and more likely score.
So then you signed for Shrewsbury, which Gav and Sam Ricketts were. So what was that like over Shrewsbury? Did you notice a jump? Was it massively different to being at Telford when you were, full time? Standards?
Yeah, so like before that happened, I always have to say the story because I found it everyone finds it funny. But the call gets, I get the call from Sam Ricketts, we wouldn't assign you, blah, blah, blah. But at the time, obviously, at Telford, we stopped getting paid around May. So I thought I need to get a job.
Because it's part-time, so yeah, you, part-time. You stop paying at May and yeah. then you start again in July.
What? Yeah, so I needed to get a job. I've been offered the contract by Telford at the time and I was just like, oh, I don't know what to do yet.
That was formality. So as a football club, it's like a re-engagement. So in order to get the compensation, like Daniel didn't go for a fee in terms of a sale, it was compensation. So the club have to, just to get their compensation, which was, we won't say what it was, but it was like a snip of
not
what a sale would be. Yeah, but, yeah, but go on, sorry.
It's going to be a lot less than what you'd be selling for
yeah.
in the end of the season.
Let's hope so. Everyone wins, don't they?
Yeah, and like, I was just looking for jobs and obviously I'd worked for Crossbar as well with the after-school clubs and stuff. I enjoyed that. That was probably what paid me the most out of football.
Yeah.
Crossbar.
Hey, why is he getting paid that? He's all right, just keep
him. Keep him sweet. Keep him sweet. We need him. He's going to be worth a few quid in a few years.
Yeah, and there was I seen a job on online and it was for Fridays at the fish and chip shop, like on the way to the train station. And the guy was like, can you do deliveries? And I was like, yeah, why not? Like, pull up in my A class. He's like, you're doing it in that? I was like, yeah, what else am I meant to do it in? And like, work for him. worked for him for a bit. Obviously, he's thinking, you don't, like, if you've got that sort of car, you don't need a job as a delivery man. But like, I didn't care about that. He was paying me £50 a day.
Yeah, money.
And like, I had to pay for me and my missus to go on holiday, so...
Bali, do you want to go to Bali again?
It weren't Bali, I think that was Mexico that year. And yeah, and then went to Shrewsbury and it was just like, I'd got there and I was like, oh my days.
You're thinking, oh, I'm earning more money as a delivery driver than Shrewsbury.
No.
Can I just say, before we go, I just remembered something actually. I remember Daniel was having an amazing season with us and it got to January and Harrogate came in. So Harrogate, what were they in the conference at the time, weren't they?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they offered £25,000. So I went to the chairman and I said, what are you thinking? He said, well, we're accepting it. And I was like, right, well, I want to achieve something. So I don't want my striker
to go.
I remember I sat with Daniel and I said, listen, do you trust me? And he said, yeah. I said, right, don't go. Like, just give it to the end of the season. I promise you'll bounce a couple of leagues and we'll get you into the league.
You see, remember? Like, I don't remember that because I was so zoned in into, like, Telford. It's like anything now. Like, even with Shrewsbury, I'm so zoned in with Shrewsbury. I don't like hearing outside noises because then it takes you away from what your focus is. And, like, that's where I was with that. Like, you're hearing this now. I can't remember that.
Because I thought, he's done. And I just said, just trust me. And end of the season, we'll bounce you and you'll go. You just got to keep doing what you're doing. And you were like, yeah, whatever. I just want to keep playing and scoring goals. And then obviously that's it. They got to the end of the season then.
You didn't start playing for Shrewsbury first team straight away though, did you?
No.
It took a bit of time.
So this is what, it was like, I got there and like, the players were there, players like that had played so many games at the level and I just felt like I was on trial. And I'd really signed
because,
though, paper.
Because I think as a senior player, like you've come from lower league, Telford, and there will be that snobbishness that you think,
who's this kid?
Yeah. Basically, like, you are on trial. You are on trial to them because they're going, you've got
we
a lot.
We don't know you.
Yeah.
You need to show
you haven't
us.
Come in as a big hitter who they know they're going, never heard of you in my life. You need to show something, mate.
Yeah.
So you're not giving, you've got no respect.
You were like fourth choice striker.
Yeah. You've got no respect when you walk in the door. No one's respecting you, are they?
I remember they was... At the time, it was Steve Morrison, Faye, Jason Cummings, Callum Lang, and me. Mm. So, like, you look at all those boys. Langy was the least experienced one. He'd played in League Two, had, I don't know, 16 goals the year before. Faye smashed it the year before that. Steve Morrison was Steve Morrison, the legend.
Come dog.
He's carried out.
Yeah. He was a madman, but I'm
Maverick.
Telling you now, probably up there, the best finishers I've ever seen in the game.
He misunderstood,
just,
isn't it?
Yeah, he just needed to just have someone that would do his running for him and go, there you go, Jace, finish. And he'd finish anything.
Are you going to tell us about this double Gazbo on Christmas parties? Can you tell us about that?
Hold on a minute.
I'll let Dave tell you.
Go on. We've got half an hour left.
We'll come back onto your stuff, Dan. We went to Dublin again. I think I organised that because I wanted to go to Dublin. Mm. It's my favourite place. So we arrived in the afternoon. We had a night out. Following day was fancy dress. We went as Money Heist.
Yeah, everyone.
Ever seen Money Heist, Spanish thing? And we were all in the red outfits and the mask on, and we had Romain Vincelot, didn't we?
As the professor.
So if you know it, he looks just like him. I got some picture on my phone, I have to show it afterwards. We looked amazing though, didn't we?
Yeah.
But we went to a bar called the Old Dubliner, which is quite famous in, is it Temple Street? Temple Bar. Amazing place, live music all day. But we got in there about 12 o'clock in the day, started drinking, and obviously you're just topping up from the night before, aren't you? So by 1-2 o'clock, everyone's well on their way. Jason Cummins, steaming, wasn't he? He was absolutely steaming, falling over everywhere, spilling drinks, getting leery. And he said he's so misunderstood because he's such a nice lad, isn't he? And he's just got this reputation, and he's a sucker for peer pressure. He'll do anything you say, won't
Even without a drink, he'd do anything.
But anyway, Bounce has come in, and it was him and Donald Love. I don't know if you remember Don as well, he's another great lad. And Bounce said, they've had too much to drink, got to go out. And I was like the most experienced, so I've gone outside. I was like, oh, no, they'll be okay, honestly, we'll sit them down and be fine. He's like, I don't mind them being drunk, but just tell them to go home, have a sleep, and come back after. And they were arguing, trying to come back in. So eventually they left, but they'd just gone to McDonald's down the road and then tried to come back in about 20 minutes late. And the bouncer's come to me and said, you've got to get them out of here. So I wanted to do me head in. So I was like, lads, just go for a sleep. And honestly, I said, ring me when you're done and he'll let you back in. So he must have carried on drinking for about 2 hours, I reckon. Yeah. 2.5 hours.
Yeah.
Then all of a sudden, you see two lads getting escorted into the bar by the bouncer. I won't see what they're dressed up yet. He's brought them in and he's just gone to us like, fair play, I've got to let them back in. And
I was outside at the time when I seen them coming with their fishing rod.
Who is doing that?
They thought they could get in by undressing out of their Money Heist outfit and putting a disguise on. So they spent over 500 quid between them at a fishing tackle shop. Again, I got a picture on my phone to show you after. But Jay's come in, he had the big fishing hat on. He had the wide sunglasses. He had the waders over his shoulders. And he had a fishing rod.
Afternoon, everybody.
Dom was the exact same. So the bouncers walked to him and just said, fair play.
That's why you go Dublin.
Then talk about the peer pressure. Do you remember Dan? He had like these fake fish with him. He'd bought like 10 plastic fish about that big.
And
he had them all on the table. He got his rod and he's trying to get them off and stuff like that. And he started drinking again, started getting more and more drunk. So then peer pressure, the lads are saying, that you won't swallow one. So he's got it up and he's like, oh. And he swallowed a big plastic fish, not biodegradable or anything like that. It's still in there now. So he done one, but then the lads kept going and going. And he must have done about...
I think I've got a video of one.
He must have done about 5 or 6 of these fish, didn't he? And then about an hour later, you just saw him on the floor, curled over, and he was in a right mess. But he looked amazing, didn't he?
Brilliant.
Unreal, man.
Misunderstood.
What a guy.
There was one, he bought a tortoise. He had that with him for ages, and like everyone was like, strange, like people buy a dog, cat, something
strange
like...
Strange pet.
And obviously he was like, yeah, I'm lonely, away from the family, blah, blah, blah.
So bought a tortoise.
Yeah,
He had a place in Sweet Lake Meadow, didn't he, by Neil Bray School. And he went to the exotic zoo shop in Telford, him and Gossie, Sean Goss. And he got an African tortoise to live with him. He didn't realise that it has to live in an atmosphere which is at least 30 degrees. So he's got his spare room, heating full blast in the spare room.
He's walking around in his pants all the time.
And about a week into it, the novelty had worn off, hadn't it?
Yeah.
And he had this realisation that the tortoise is going to live longer than him. what do you call it?
I can't
Shelby.
Remember. Yeah, Shelby.
That was called it, Shelby.
And I got, like 3 weeks before he knew he was going by then, like he's looking for it everywhere, all around the house. He's like, listen, boys, I'm not taking the mic anymore. I can't find it. It's gone missing. Few boys went over to his house looking for it. No one could find it.
He even looked in the attic.
Yeah, no one could find it. And then, like, 2 days before he left, he comes to the training ground with all these stuff. I'm like, where is it? Where is it? He's like, ah, it was in my wardrobe the whole time. I was like, oh, didn't you see that? Like, that surely it would have been the first place you looked. He's just like, ah, I can't even find it.
And he's just about to go back up the road to Scotland, isn't he, to sign for, was it Dundee he went to or somewhere?
Yeah, Dundee, yeah.
And he's got all his stuff all through his car, absolutely jam-packed. And he's got this box on the front seat, seat belted in with a torch.
It was brilliant. Some character, man.
Brilliant.
Some
character. Love
good.
It.
He was good. And you were behind him when you signed.
So, it was
so as
them.
As you progressed.
Them four, obviously, ahead of me. And then Steve Morrison, like, he started cooking on that. They weren't really having him. They'd start him in the game and then bring him off, I don't know, 5 minutes
regularly,
into the second half.
Yeah.
And he used to, I'd be sat on the bench and I'd be like, flipping out more. But yeah, he's effing this, he's effing that. Blah, blah, blah. I'm not a kid. He might as well not play me. I was just like, flipping out. I'd love to play that 5 minutes.
Yeah, I love that.
Like, I'll take it. So I was sort of just waiting for my time. And then, like you said about the difference in the jump, the only thing I felt was I weren't as fit as the other boys. I knew I'd get enough, like, improvement with the ball and game understanding and stuff the more I was with them. But I wasn't as fit as them, and I pulled my groin at the time. So I was out for, like, 4 weeks, and then the Accrington game, that was the game I came back and scored, and then after that gave me a bit more confidence. Faye scored one, and then I scored the winner, or something like that. Yeah. And that gave me the confidence to know that, okay, maybe I scored one here, I can do it at this level.
Again, being inside as a player watching you, it's not just bigging you up. You knew that he was literally just going to... He was starting at number five, but you knew he was just going to pick people off just by his work rate every single day.
But did you think that straight away, though?
100%.
Tuesday night.
So when you saw Daniel the first couple of weeks, you thought, he's going to be decent?
Just from his mindset.
I remember him saying that to you, wasn't he? I remember us three going for pint, and I remember, like, you... And I was like, you mentioned him, and you went, he's good, you know. I remember you saying it to him, and I was like, is he doing? And you were like, he's good, he's going to be good. Yeah. I remember seeing it.
I remember that because I just said that it was a Tuesday night when at Accrington and we'd been training at Telford, and obviously I'm looking on my phone, like Shrewsbury have won, Doe's got the winner, and I'm like, yes, yes, like that, and everyone's gone, what? I've gone, what? And obviously I'm the Telford manager, and they're going,
Shrewsbury have won, everyone, Shrewsbury have won.
What? And they're going, what's the matter? I was like, oh, QPR have won again. And obviously, like, it's hard for me. I'm an alien, aren't I? So don't buy into this. Like, for me, like, at the moment, Telford are there and Shrewsbury are up there. So, like, you know, I got a really good link as the manager with Shrewsbury by getting, like, your Ryan Sears and your Ryan Barnett and, or like, John McAtee and that. I was able to create that link, the link that was just so distant for years. I sort of reconnected the clubs by saying, look, and like it's because, like, you know, Rowley was brilliant to us as well, and the managers at the time, and I didn't understand. I was like, well, it's not like we're threatening you or you're threatening us. Obviously, I know the fan rivalry is a little bit different, but for me, it was like, well, why not link in? Like, why not help each other? Like, you were 10 minutes away. Mm-hmm. And but yeah, that was I celebrated it like I've just won the FA Cup final, and everyone was going, what was that? I was like, yeah, QPR have just scored. And they were like, 0-0. I was like, yeah.
So, Daniel, so before, so you had that really rise, but then you also had an injury, bad injury, didn't you?
Yeah.
How do you cope with that, like, mentally, when you get an injury like that?
Like, sometimes, obviously, going through this season for me is just playing as much games as I can.
So this season, so you're just, like, you're back playing?
Back playing, just want to enjoy football again and do the best I can do for the team, myself, and just, like, help as many young boys that are coming through as well, because the team's a lot younger now.
Do you feel like you're an experienced player now then, that team?
Yeah. Obviously, I'm still 27, so there's still a lot to learn. And, like, with footy, I always think, if you can't, you always can learn, whatever age you're at.
Absolutely.
Do you mean, like, Edo was there with us towards the end of his career, and he's learning different things with managers like Steve Cottrell and whatever. Learning different set pieces and stuff like that. How many hours we used to take on them.
My worry is, though, Daniel, like, I'm, like, me and Daniel are still very close and speak very, like, often. I'm still very protective. Like, I think you've come out of, like, a big, big injury there. You're playing a lot of football at the moment.
Yeah.
And, like, for me, like, obviously, I know I speak to you a lot and, like, you just want to be playing games because I know what you're like. But looking, like, from a manager's perspective, like, And I know the club have got a lot of injuries at the moment, mm-hmm. but like for the injury that you've had, you should really like being eased in a little bit more. Like I feel like you're playing a lot of games. Like my concern is like, are you going to be all right long term? Like,
at the start, I was so protective, obviously, because it's your knee and you don't want to be out for another 11 months. 11 months is like long time, and obviously,
nurse is going
exactly,
yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
I remember like that day, George Daniels, obviously, we'd both. The second game into pre-season, playing 90 minutes. I was like, shouldn't be playing 90 minutes. But
it's a lot.
We felt, as players, you could get asked, do you want to come off?
You never say that.
No one's going to say you want to come off.
You can't, can you? Because you think if you say yes, you're getting judged.
Exactly.
If a manager asks me, you want to come off, you just go, no.
Yeah.
His was an unlucky, it was a tackle.
Yeah, it was a tackle. Yeah, so there's nothing that, like, whether he played longer or shorter, it could have happened at any time. But I just remember, like, them saying, yeah, I think it is that, and I'm in the change room. I had to, like, go away because I started crying because you know how long...
you're done. Exactly. Season done.
Do you mean your season done, what you have to go through again, and just mentally, you're not a footballer, you just...
You're by yourself, rehab in the gym, most days.
Like, luckily, we had each other. I was by myself for a month and a bit, and then George comes in with me, but, like, still, you're still by yourself. You see the boys training, enjoying, they're winning. Last year, they went on the 6 in a row, and you're like,
it's a horrible feeling because everybody's going, I bet you're so chuffed, and you're going, not really. I'm pleased for the lads, but a bit of me, I'm not part of that.
One of the games before, like, when they were in that 6 in a row, I think, like, the third or fourth one, I was like, the manager came in the physio room, was talking to us in the morning. I was like, you boys are flying. He's like, no, it's not you boys. You're part of that as well. Yeah. And it's good for him to say that, but like...
But you don't feel it.
You're not really part of it, especially being me as a striker. Strikers, you want to score goals. You want to be the main guy doing the job and whatever. But like, when you're injured, then you can't help the boys. And then they go from 6 wins in a row to not winning 3 in a row. And you're thinking, like, this is normally my time now. I can change that. Yeah.
How did you feel with the injury? Because you've always had this like insatiable attitude to work. All of a sudden you get injured. That's taken away from you because you need to rest, recover.
Yeah.
How did you find that mentally?
It's like where your faith comes in a little bit.
Yeah, so this is like perfect.
So you're a Christian, aren't you?
Yeah, so I'm a Christian and like, obviously, I just believe that like, everything happens for a reason and like, God's always got the best plan for you, regardless whether your ACL goes or whether, God forbid, someone in your family passes away. There's always, like, God's always going to comfort you in a way that you know that it's all going to work out for good. So I remember the day, it's rare that nowadays that you do your ACL with no contact. And so I've literally just been played down the channel, twisted one way, gone the other way. Pop, and I was like, whoa, never felt that before. Tried to play on, couldn't, my knee just felt like it was empty. So I went off, and Steve Cottrell, we call him, the boys banter now, we call him the all-knowing. Because most of the time, he'd say something and he was right. And he'd go, what was that, son? I was just like, I just felt like a pop that round my calf, like, nothing too bad. He was like, does it sound good, son? Does it sound good? ACL, that.
And he's right.
I was like, I'm sat there, like, there's 20 minutes.
20
minutes left.
That's the thing to say as well, isn't it?
He just says, I've done my ACL.
Yeah, like, you know what doing your ACL means.
That's like 9 to 12 months, they say. Nah, no way. I'm speaking to Big H. He's like, nah, don't worry about that. You'll be fine, don't worry. Don't worry, a few weeks later, you find out. Yeah, see, I was like, this guy, man, just jinxed me there.
When you've been around it like him for 30-odd years, he must have had other people say that as well.
Mate,
like,
I think he's probably wrong a lot of the time.
Yeah, so,
right?
Like...
Yeah, homing on the positive.
You're the one
that he's got right.
Yeah, but, like, my faith, my family, teammates, and, like... Helped me out loads. Even like the supporters of the club as well, like I'd be getting messages like, Dan, we're missing you. Are you getting on? Getting messages on Facebook and stuff like that.
I think they like you. I mean, he's got them here, haven't they? Yeah. It's just the effort. I mean, I think as a football fan, you just want the effort and the work rate and the desire. And if you show that, fans will stick with you, won't
it's
you?
It's like that, like what I said about my like old man from young. He instilled that in us. And I always just thought, well, people are paying their hard-earned money to come and watch you play football. The least you can do, you could be really rubbish, but the least you can do is try your best to let them know that, listen, like, he's working his hardest here. And eventually, like, if you keep doing it, it will click at some point. That's how I've always believed anyway. So, like, through my years of being at Shrewsbury, even when I've felt like, oh, maybe I'm not, like, good enough, you go through stages where you not score for 10 games and you're like, it's catching up on you now, like, you know, not quite firing while the striker at Portsmouth has scored 8 goals or whatever, and you're like, things aren't quite clicking, but you just keep mentally, I'm just at a place where I just know that, just keep going, it'll click, and like, I've been lucky enough to, I think I'm established in League One now to
absolutely
show that it's clicked.
And you've more than
and
established.
You've got a good song as well.
Yeah.
Which helps, doesn't it?
I love that song.
Before we take any questions and stuff, can I just ask you, so is your favourite memory this goal against Liverpool? I mean, scoring at Anfield, you know, you're thinking about getting released from all these different clubs.
Yeah.
Scoring at Anfield's got to be, that's not bad, is it?
Yeah, obviously, I love the Accrington goal because it was like my first.
Yeah, it was a big one for
professional
you.
Professional league goal. I scored for Crewe at Accrington as well. That was my. I think we played in the, it wasn't Papa John's then, but it was a Papa John's game. I don't know what it's called then. They change the name every year. scored there. And then obviously the Accrington game, when I scored that, just like the relief of...
Like, after the game, yeah, felt amazing.
Felt good. But then that Liverpool one, for 5 minutes or however long we were leading for, you're playing against Van Dijk, Konate, Fabinho. I remember our game plan was to stop Fabinho and like no one got near him.
It's easy to have a plan, isn't it? But it's different.
No one got near him. Van Dijk looked like he was in like slippers. He was just getting the ball, touching it, zinging out there.
But for 5 minutes, you won the lap and you had scored.
Yeah, and you're just thinking
that'll be the goal when 20 years time when you're telling your that'll be the goal you're telling your kids about.
Yeah,
100%. He's gonna have some bigger ones coming.
There will be there will be bigger ones, but that one will be up there, 100%. Like I've got like, luckily Van Dijk gave me his top. I didn't. It was weird.
He asked you.
Yeah. no, I didn't. Like you see players asking for players' tops while the game's going on, or like just after the game. It's not professional for me, so I just waited till after and just said, "It's all right to have your top." And he was like, "Yeah, you scored, didn't you?" I was like. Yeah, I did.
Actually, yeah, mate. Passed against you.
Yeah. I'm right behind it. That was a great finish.
Yeah, there's that video, isn't there?
So after the game, obviously, like, I went with Daniel's family. So, like, we all sort of sat together. And but we were right behind the goal. And obviously, like, I know what's coming, so I'm shouting in the game. Don't think you heard me anyway. So I'm not going, centre of the goal. Like, I'm thinking, like, I'll just go there, like, you know, obviously, but like, you know, act classy, don't get too involved, don't get too emotional. As soon as the game, I'm like this, going, oh my God, Daniel, like that. And I'm going, centre of the goal, Daniel. Like, literally, I must have shouted it 50 times. And everyone's going, what is he on about? And then obviously, the ball's come in. But obviously, because I'm watching Daniel and the ball coming in, you see it on the video on Match of the Day. And, like, you see me celebrating before it's even got in. And he sent me the video.
I just seen the video of, like, some guy in, like, black jeans. Just, I score and he just gets up there. Who's that guy? So I send it to my younger brother, Manny. And he's like, that's Gav.
Because I could see him coming in. So I knew he was going to score. And I'm celebrating already. And then, like, yeah, I'm on, like...
But it's classic. You're proud, aren't you? Because you've had a big influence, haven't you?
Yeah,
and you've done amazing. I think
but again, like, I'm proud of the, like, the footballing achievements. But as a person, like, the things that Daniel says tonight, I'm sure everyone really like. Like, just, you know, and I say it to my kids all the time. And it's why Daniel's such a good role model. And, like, just be the best you can be. And even if that's not going to be... what lives up to what everybody else thinks. Like, just be the best you can be. Give yourself the best chance. Be doing everything that you can. And, you know, I only wish for my football career. Like, I was miles away. But, you know, if I only could have done that. And now later in life, it's brilliant. You know, my circle of friends is like, we drive each other on to be the best we can be. But, You know, you got you at such a young age, like
such
at 27.
Such an advocate for how to do it.
Amazing. That's what I'm proud of, the person as a
but that's what I feel like, you know, like when I go back to my years, obviously at Stevenage, and how hard I said it was, the main thing I got from that was the coach and Graham Wesley. You see people like that and you're like, why are these guys like this? But then, like, I always just use them to go, I'm not going to see anything worse than this. Like, these lot... It can't top top this, but then you look at them and you get the best out of them. And I remember one of the best things they said to me was, like, whatever you do, whether you go on to play football professionally, whether you're a binman, whether you work at a pub, whether you work at McDonald's, just do the best you can, like, do and stuff like that. So that always stayed with me from young. So I always just thought, all right, just do the best I can do, because then when I get to your ages and I've finished my career...
Whoa, calm down.
I was about to give a round of applause, end the podcast and all that now, feeling like proper...
No, you know what I mean? When I
proper conscious
career,
about my age.
He wasn't saying this 20 years ago. Yeah.
He looked me dead in the eye then. He looked me dead in the eye when I get to your age.
No, yeah. When I finish...
Like, start wearing cardigans and that.
Like,
yeah.
When I finish playing, so I'd know that I've done the best...
Yeah, like, exactly.
And tried my best and left everything. No regrets.
No regrets. Exactly. That's the key, isn't it? No regrets.
What a way to finish that.
Mate, give him a round of applause then, Daniel.
Thank you. Thank you.
Right. We'll keep it rolling, won't we? We'll keep it rolling. We'll do 5 minutes. Anybody's got any questions or anything like that? You feel free to ask. Feel free to just shout out. Anybody got any questions? Can I just ask a question? Who looks the best dressed out of the four of us sat here?
Tracksuit.
You two, it's the same. Yours is like the real version of what Sam's got on. You've got the same.
This is cheap stuff. Yeah.
Sam, I have a poll up, by the way. 65% in favour of Dan's tracksuit.
Tell you what, there's a bit of bias. There's a bit of bias there because I think there's a lot of like current Shrewsbury Town fans. It's a younger generation. Yeah. Like my little boy's probably voted for Daniel instead of me.
Most of Sam's fans don't know how to use the internet.
They're not doing that. Might I try and ring off the house phone? No, I think that's brilliant. I think that's brilliant what you said, Daniel, isn't it? So what do you think about moving forward? What would be the aims for Shrewsbury Town this season, do you think, as a club and for yourself?
Oh, big question.
Big question. I just thought, let's go for it.
I don't mind.
I've had a couple of pints, haven't I? Like, I just thought, let's get in there.
I feel like the club as well, like, honesty is probably the best way for everyone. Yeah. Do you mean for us, the players, so we know what's the aim from the top all the way down, so we as the players know what they're going for. So, they've never said to us that this is what we're going for this year. And this
you
is
can't, though, can you? Because you can't say we're happy to be 12th because that's like, you, as a fan, you go, well, that's not good enough. Yeah. We wouldn't have been in the playoffs. But is the playoffs realistic?
Players, because you want to do the best you can do, like, you'd speak to Shay Dunkley, him being the captain, he's like, just getting better than 12th. Mm. Is what he tries to get the boys to go through. But me being me and coming back off my injury and the transition that's going on at the club right now, and everyone can see that, it's just a time for us to make sure we stay at the level first, which is, 50 points normally you have to get to?
That's always the first milestone.
First, of course. Get to your 50
points. I think 3 weeks ago, everyone was thinking it could be in trouble, yeah?
Exactly.
But then, obviously, it's picked up a little bit now. But 12.
If we remember on a podcast that we had weeks ago, I said it.
You did predictions.
Yeah, and it's all well and good. Like, people have, like, a lot of people were like for Cotterill and then very critical. It's like, we need a new regime. We need to come into the present day. And then it's like, we'll scrap that old school manager mentality. We're going to now bring in like a director of football, Mickey Moore. And then you're going to bring in like a young, innovative coach who's going to be assisted by a really experienced coach, Marcus Bignett. And like, obviously, when it started, like we said, didn't we? Like, just let it.
I said, just get in the stiffs to manage it. Yeah. why are we not doing that? Why aren't we doing that? Why isn't Dave the manager?
Yeah.
Like, you'll be like, you do all the coaching, and I'm like, there's a life coach for the lads.
Easy.
I don't even know why I see an issue. I don't even know. Can we get that in the front of the Shropshire store?
Yeah. Can we do a poll on that? Can we do it next?
Can we get that on? Get that on, Scott.
Is that all right?
In this, literally. Gav's got his. What have you got? Your pro license, the A license, and everything.
I'm on the pro license.
He's like Shooting Town Legend. He'd be easy. You get manager job easy.
I'm the pro license. Like David was.
Why aren't we doing it? I don't understand why the three of us aren't doing it.
I agree, but I just think like you need to give it time, and now we're seeing we're giving it time. It's just it does take time. These things don't just happen overnight. The players, new players coming in, everybody has to build the trust. It doesn't just happen overnight. Yeah. You've got to give it time.
And I think like nowadays people give managers, I don't know, 3-4 windows to do their stuff.
Lucky if you get that.
Yeah, I know, but like that's before you see where that manager's going to go to. I think they need, obviously, they need to be doing well within that period of time.
Yeah, so they don't get the tick-tack. It's about 3 points, isn't it?
Yeah, but like within that time to get their own players in and their own ideas in, because there'd be some boys now the manager might not
want, but
he's not going to say that
because
he needs them then.
Well, you can't say
but
that,
then later on he'll fit with his players in and then so on and so forth.
And for you, mate, without being disrespectful to Shrewsbury and the club you're at now, what are your ambitions?
He's so big. He's so big time. Did when I get him the Wolves and that? But it's all about shoes. It's about the Prem and Wolves.
Dave's trying
and all
to get
him
for Wales.
He's not Welsh. Nigeria, then move to England, mate. You can't He's Welsh. He'd have had 40 caps by now.
He came from Nigeria. did you drive through Wales?
And dish
did you drive
like
through
that?
Wales to get to here?
Sorry,
you want to play the highest level you possibly can.
Of course, because that's your aim as a kid. And for as long as it has been, that's always been my aim, to push on as high as possible and play for the best teams as possible. And like right now, my focus is, like I've said, is on doing the best I can do for Shrewsbury. And like before my injury, the form I was on or how like I was playing my football, I want to get back to that first before going, like deciding what else I need to do with my career and whatever else, but just being focused on playing for Shrewsbury and scoring goals and feeling good.
I can honestly say as well, Daniel is definitely the only footballer that I've ever spoken to that does not take in any outside information, that is literally like, I play for Shrewsbury, I'm trying to score goals for them, I'm thinking about Saturday. Once I think about Saturday, we've got a game Tuesday, I'm thinking about that.
What do you mean, though? Do you not look on Twitter and stuff?
I was big on that when I was younger.
Yeah, it's hard not to do that these days.
I'd go on Twitter and see, that Udo is rubbish.
Yeah, Udo is rubbish, and you go, brilliant. What's the point of me looking through this when I haven't played well, looking through and getting hammered?
Look at that and stuff like that. And even
it's hard not to, though, isn't it?
Twitter shows you loads of different people's things, even if you don't follow them.
Yeah.
So, I'd be on my phone for a bit and I'd go, I don't need to see any more. Just leave it. And I don't, because when you're good, when I scored the other day, the best thing in Shropshire.
Yeah, it's worth having a look then, though, isn't it? Because you're like, yes!
It's probably the worst time to have a look, because then you feel like you're the top dog.
Sometimes as a player, sometimes you can go under the radar regardless of the result. When you're a manager, like if you win, even if the team have played poorly, you're Pep Guardiola. If you lose, but you've had a good, you're Pepperami. You literally cannot.
It's hard to not look. Even back in our day, we didn't have Twitter, but you'd have the Shropshire Star, and you'd have your mark out of 10. If I'd played well, I'd be like, I'll have a couple of copies of them, please. If you'd been dragged at half time, you had like a 4. I'd be like,
that was the hardest thing.
Do anything else? I'd be like, no.
Signing for Shrewsbury, it was the hardest thing when you're putting out your bin. And like, I remember one week being like 8 out of 10, thinking, I'm absolutely buzzing. And then we played really well. I'm sure it was Bury at home. We played really, really well, and we lost 1-0. And I was just like, absolutely devastated. Got absolutely slaughtered, like a 3 out of 10 in the Shropshire Star. Putting your bins out and just getting hammered by people living across the road. You're like, I'm trying to put my bin out, mate. Like, calm down.
I didn't realise it. But it's hard to show. Yeah, you've got to try and have a balance, haven't you? Because obviously it flips, doesn't it?
It's harder for the younger boys because they're so engaged on social media now.
And they definitely look. The footballers look like they pretend they don't. You can't help but look.
I purposely, I can look, but I purposely don't because of how I was in the past, where I'd look and I'd be like,
really
I'd be like, it's not good for me. So
no,
I don't look, so then I'm not too high and not too low, because a kid is telling me I'm better than Ronaldo one day and then someone else is saying,
"How
you
the worst football I've ever seen?" And you're
so
like,
"What's the point?
Pop your truths in the
stay
middle.
In the middle, Jimmy. That's how I." Just...
Thanks very much for coming. Obviously, Gav's had enough. He's gone.
Has anybody?
Don't need him anyway.
Has anybody got any questions before Dan goes?
It can be for anybody. Yeah, we'll cover it. Sorry if we had somewhere to go. I mean, we said about 10 o'clock, didn't we? So we've done pretty well. Kept it. Yeah. Cardigan's awful. Apart from that, there's not much to say.
It didn't help. He used to
have Dave Artell. You had Dave Artell as your manager, didn't you? And Gav. I don't know if you know Dave Artell. He looks a lot like Gav. look up Dave Artell on... he used to play for Shrewsbury. Yeah, I remember him and Gav very similar. I thought they were twins. But that's why I mentioned Dave Artell was a manager. I went, Wikipedia's got mixed up. It's actually Gavin, but they meant Dave, but it's just pretty interchangeable.
Like
pretty interchangeable.
What's your most annoying habit?
Who, Gavin's?
Yeah. But for all of you, actually, Mr. Reed, you can see he's not here, he can talk. It's okay.
What do you used to hate about him as a coach? Or not like as much?
He loved that thing, like his motto, hard work, jobbing off.
Yeah, jobbing off. Yeah. He says that to me when we go for a drink. Jobbing off, I'm just going to have a drink, mate.
I've gone for a coffee with him before and he'd just be telling you about hard work, desire, jobbing off. I'm like, you're just having the coffee. chill.
He's intense. Intense.
Yeah.
What's Gavin's most annoying habit to you? I was going to say being late, but if Andy, you go to the toilet because you're always later than him, so I don't want to.
I would probably say what Dan's saying as well when football terminology.
Yeah,
I think if he talked about it on the podcast, he'd expect the listeners to know exactly what he means.
Yeah, he does it all the time, doesn't he? And he goes like inside out players. It's like shh, and then everybody fell about and had a fight. He was dressed as Madonna.
Steve
right, unless anybody's got any more questions, I think we're pretty much done. We're going to maybe have another drink. Stay around for half an hour. Anybody got any other questions for anybody? Thanks very much for coming anyways.
In the Stiffs with Budgeon Motors. Budgeon Motors are on Stafford Park in Telford and Featherbed Lane in Shrewsbury. For all your car needs, contact Budgeon now.